Ms. Rosie Hill, and I appear today as counsel for the submitters listed on the front page of the opening legal submissions, which has just been handed out to you. Today I'm just here to introduce one of our witnesses, Mr. Anthony Strang. So the key aspects, just for a bit of an overview for your knowledge of our case, is to provide recognition in the district plan for rural living opportunities in the rural zone and to address the most efficient and effective use of the land resource within the rural lifestyle zone. I just want to also formally note for the record that Mr. Strang is related to one of the submitters represented in their submissions. And by way of overview, Mr. Strang today will be presenting a record of the subdivision of the Strang family farm over the past 30 years, and also a little bit on the history and viability of the Arrow Irrigation Scheme as a major piece of infrastructure and its potential capacity to provide for increased rural living development in the future. And this evidence of Mr. Strang is to support the wider case for rural living, which will be presented for this panel next week. So, if there are any questions from the panel of Mr. Strang, I'll defer to you. Mr. Strang hasn't presented a summary of this evidence, so it is tabled, dated 21 April.
Yes,
You've done very well, Mr. Strang. You're the first person from the entire hearing that that's ever happened to us.
I just have one question, though.
It's a clarification of the presentation of the rest of your case in regard to these for next week.
Yes.
And it's just to clarify for me, this one here, today's one had L&D Farms, but it also had Ayrburn Farm State Limited. Just in terms of the timetable that I've got here, Ayrburn Farm State doesn't appear in this list. Should it?
Yes,
it
should. Yeah, that's an omission. Thank you for
that. Right. And then just related to that, then, so that yourself and Mr. Goldsmith will be taking us through that, and then the remainder of your witnesses that are all under, I think the number starting 430, all the rest of your witnesses, are all appearing at that one time, then, rather than dotted throughout the week?
That's correct. All the other witnesses are presenting during that one hearing slot on the 26th. Counsel to that group has not yet been confirmed whether it will be Mr. Goldsmith or myself. However, we will advise prior to the hearing, so it is. It may well be both of us. And I just want to confirm, sorry, I put you wrong, Commissioner Sinclair, that Ayrburn Farms has actually been put in with the lot with Jeff Brown's evidence on the following the 27th.
Yes.
So
it's only Mr. Brown's evidence that relates to Ayrburn Farm, not the other witnesses here in the first one. I'm trying to understand who's going to come when. If you could just tell me who's coming when,
it's
I'd be happy.
It's the witnesses we're concerned about.
The witnesses, yes.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, our witnesses are coming for this case on
Thursday.
Except Mr. Brown and Mr. Farrell are both getting family evidence right in the rural living, so
yes.
Mr. Brown's evidence relates to Ayrburn, and the other witnesses relate to the other list. So it's a crossover to cut down on Mr. Brown.
So Mr. Farrell's will be on Thursday as well.
Thursday.
Right.
take a slightly unusual course in the steering engine by a senior commissioner, as I've got some evidence from myself personally to bring the developer company, might give some assistance to the panel.
We noticed you must be in a different role. You don't have the jacket and tie on.
Just like, I'll come back to the developers. So my evidence has been presented. I'm sure you've read it. Hope you've read it. I have a summary statement, which you've seen this 2 pages, which I'll just go through now, if I may. This summary statement relates to my evidence dated 21 April 2016, given in my capacity as director of Arcadia and Triangle Limited. I have some corrections to that statement of evidence as follows. Amend paragraph 1.5 on page 1, and then underlined. Just read the underlined. Just want to make it quite clear that this evidence doesn't come into the O&L or the ONF anywhere, and it primarily relates to the Waterloo Basin. Doesn't mean to say it might have been useful somewhere else, but Waterloo Basin is what I've been thinking about and what the evidence is in relation to. Secondly, and in that sentence to read, the rule regime has been now in place for, should be almost 20 years, it's actually 18, rather than over 20 years. It's confirmed by the council in 1998. Thirdly, amend paragraph 4.3 on page 14, the second sentence. This is about 2 residential units on the building platform. Proposals there for a pretty minor variation because all it effectively does is allow the residential flat to be larger than 70 square metres, thereby changing the residential flat into a separate residential unit. And a similar amendment on paragraph 4.5 on page 14, allowing the residential flat to be larger than 70 square metres will not create any perceptible difference. Finally, Schedule 2 attached to this evidence should only contain one aerial photograph marked B, which has a superimposed purple boundary identifying the location of the triangle. Two additional aerial photographs unrelated to the triangle, both marked A, were accidentally uploaded in the same link. They came from a survey in the same link, they were attached in the same link, and probably uploaded in the same link. But,
I think that got sorted out for us.
Those other ones appear somewhere else, attached to somebody else's evidence. Mr. Strange and Mr. Storm's evidence.
That's the Glen.
That's the wrong Glen. That's Glen Powell.
Yes.
Yes.
And so it should only be
that's the one.
Yes. Right, okay, in the aerial photo of the triangle.
With a triangle. Triangle.
Yep. Yes. Okay, thank you.
And there's attachment C, which has the areas. I have one additional comment to make in relation to part 4 of evidence on the subject of 2 residential units within 1 residential building platform. I just talked about briefly. I just want to emphasise the, shall I say, real world view of that particular issue. In the rural lifestyle zone, or in fact the rural zone, given a 1,000 square metre residential building platform, and even under the council's new 500 square metre recommended rule, you can build a 400 square metre house and a 70 square metre residential flat as further activity.
Actually, well, not at all, that's correct, because I've just been through the rules with Mr. McDonald, who preceded you, and I think there's a bit of a lacuna in the rules. You can have a residential unit and you can build it. You can have a residential flat, but there seems to be no provision for you to build it. Except perhaps as a discretionary activity for the construction of a building and a residential building platform, which I don't think it was intended. I suspect that there's a unintended consequences in there somewhere.
I've been through those rules a dozen times, and I'm still having to go back to go through the
I'm also unclear as whether it's 70 plus the 400 is within the 500, or is it in the 500?
I didn't bring my plan, but doesn't the definition of residential units include a residential flat? I thought from memory the definition of residential unit included a residential flat. In which case you might have a lacuna to think about.
But you do, because the rule for residential units is you only have one per building platform.
But if it includes a residential flat, which I thought it did, I could be wrong with that. Be wrong about that.
There's a draft in it.
Yes. Anyway, the intention, I think, is that you can have a unit and a flat. My point is that if you want to build a 350 square metre unit and a 150 square metre flat, you're not compliant. Because you're over 70 square metres. And if you just think about it, and if you want a flat for an elderly family or a residential flat you might want to rent out permanently to people or workers in town, 70 square metres is a very arbitrary small area. And given that you can build a 500 square metre house as an activity, but a 350 square metre house and 150 square metre residential flat is non-compliant, I'm just commenting that the area of 70 square metres, which I'm fairly sure comes from urban areas where you can do a residential flat in the town, anywhere in this district, if you can build a house, you can build a residential flat. My understanding is the 70 square metres really comes from urban context. But out in the rural, lifestyle zone, you can build 1,000 square metre house. To limit the flat to 70 square metres and imply non-complying activity status means effectively you'll be lucky to build a bigger one. Because as soon as you go above 70 square metres non-complying, you'll set precedents and threaten the integrity of the district plan and create a precedent that everybody else can follow. And we have that kind of debate. So I just want to enlarge on that particular aspect from a real life point of view, thinking about residential and practical rural lifestyle zone where you can build 1,000 square metre house. Turning the page, and this is by way of supplementary evidence, because these maps were circulated after the evidence was lodged, and so we didn't have the benefit of them when we lodged evidence. These are the three building concept maps that were circulated with the council on land on 29 April, and they show built houses and unbuilt residential building platforms from the basin. These are referenced, I have attached copies of those three maps. And I just wanted to make a few comments, which again might help the panel when it comes to consider these things. My first comment is that they contain errors. I refer to map 1, which is the unbuilt RMEPs. You'll see I'm attaching map 1, and they're red and orange. And you may recollect, commissioners, that red are RMEPs registered against titles, and orange are RMEPs which have been consented but have not yet been registered because the subdivision hasn't taken place. So combined, the red, the orange, and the unbuilt RDPs. Now, little Roman 1, I'm referring to area 9, and I say 9 of phantom red RDPs should be removed. If I can refer you to area 9, which is the so-called triangle, the basin, and at the southern end, the lower end, where you see that great conglomeration, the pointy end, that great conglomeration of red and orange building platforms. That's the Hawthorne Estate property. That was some of the cases that were in the Court of Appeal. And what happened there was that was a 32 hectare property. It was subdivided into 8 4 hectare lots, building platforms, deposited, titles issued. Then it was reconsented under the Hawthorne case for 32 lots, partially done, partially not, but the 32 replaced 8 of the original one. So there's a total of 32, not 40. And in the council system doesn't recognise that one consent's overtaken the other. So there are actually 40 building platforms in the area. So it's doubly confused by the fact that some of them sit on top of or half on top of
others.
So it's actually very messy.
So if we put a line around that area, which presumably is below the orange ones and that lower part,
well,
would that be correct? Or is it
no. In actual fact, this is a good example. In that Hawthorne Estate area, the northern end, if you look very carefully, you'll see there are 8 orange and 2 red.
Yes.
The 2 red phantoms.
Right.
So if we
put a line around there and then say within that area there are 8 that shouldn't be there.
Correct.
Yeah.
But you see they're overlaid with it, so
it's not obvious.
That's why it looks so messy.
Yeah.
And just while I'm on that, the ninth, at the northern end, above nine, there's an orange, there's a rib of orange, and above that there are five red. The middle one is a phantom. Right. It was the original platform on the 4 hectare lot, replaced by four.
Okay.
So there are nine phantoms.
Yep.
The second issue, which is going to asterisk Roman 2 of my written note, nine, and actually I think it's 11, I need to go and check, red RVPs actually contain houses. Mostly completed, but three are under construction. And therefore, should be removed from that one and included on that two. What's happened here, sir, is that the council's system
hasn't caught up with the reality.
Hasn't caught up, that's a couple of years behind. So
Mr. Barr told us that was possible when he presented these.
Right. Yes. So therefore, Area 9 overstates the unbuilt RVP position by 17 or 19 in that triangle. And I suspect, that's the only, I know that area very well. I suspect there are probably areas elsewhere for the same reasons. Amended or replaced building platforms and some of our data and council records. So, my first point is that be a little bit careful that Map 1 overstates the position to a certain degree. I'm not criticising the council, it's just not easy. The second point I wanted to make, and this is again my point of view as a developer, Map 1, the overall unbuilt RDP situation, is actually relatively limited. And I'll confess, when I saw this map compared to the black dotted map, I was personally surprised. I thought there would be more red and orange and less black. But if you look at Map 1, towards the right, 23, there's like all that yellow Bendemeer, there's the whole Bendemeer area. And there's a triangle we've been talking about, but there's a whole bundle. In 14, all those ones close together are three wood. And outside those three areas, you kind of look around. I look at that map and I say, actually, this applies less than I thought, and it's vanishing faster than I thought. And it may explain why. I think I said maintenance. I don't know what I did, but I had two agents and a private purchaser ring me to see if any of Arcadia is four lots for sale. Because there is, at the moment, a diminishing supply which is putting pressure on price. So, those comments about Map 1 may possibly have some relevance to what I call the potential effect situation, because the various comments out of council witnesses about we don't know what the effects are of the unbuilt platforms. But in reality, if you look at them and where they are, Bendemeer, for example, all that cluster in Area 23, as far as I'm aware, you can only see that from the crowd range road at the top of the zigzag or from Coronet Peak. I don't think you can see that area anywhere from the basin. And a lot of these other building platforms will have been consented under pretty stringent rules which include visibility. So there's possibly a question mark about if they were all built, to what extent would anybody actually know the difference? And the second thing that you might consider relevant to it is there is in fact a diminishing supply situation. And there's evidence coming up from Mr. Reed about that. But it's just quite interesting that the supply that's out there is actually not as significant as one might think. The third comment I wanted to make refers to Map 3, and I refer to existing and zoned rural lifestyle areas. If you turn to Map 3, I also found these three maps very interesting. If you look at the green on Map 3, that's the green shading, which are the existing and new rural lifestyle zone areas. They largely represent existing development. Now, Dalefield Area 6, there's a bit of scope in there for additional supply.
Five.
I call 5 and 6 together. Yeah. Oh, 5 is Dalefield, 6 is Fitzpatrick Bowl, which is kind of a side Dalefield.
The one that I'm familiar with.
Yes, that's right, yes. So, depending if that northern side of Littles Road develops in accordance with its consent or its rezoning, there's some scope there for additional supply. In Area 3, which is Mooney Road, there's a bit of scope in there for additional supply. But actually, from a supply point of view, I kind of look at that and say, those rezoned areas, which are reflecting existing development, aren't actually creating much additional supply. Which might have relevance to the 1 hectare, 2 hectare debate, which is what I'm saying in that point.
What about for the rest of the district?
Sorry?
What about for the rest of the district?
I'm just a basin. I'm talking about the supply of rural and what's in the Waikato Basin. I haven't looked at Wanaka and seen how much has been created over there. It's a different market. The Waikato Basin is its own market. I know Area 9 very well. A two hectare density is maybe two or three more in Area 9. And 1 hectare density might be six or seven. Just because Area 9 has been subdivided down, most of it's been subdivided down to 1 hectare already. But this is just, Map 3 creates a pretty interesting picture. And what the basic point I'm making is that the rezoning, from my point of view, as a landowner, is reacting to past consented development. It isn't really creating a hell of a lot of existing potential supply. And that might be relevant to 2 hectare versus 1 hectare density. The final point I found interesting on Map 3 was I queried the extent to which the council's rural lifestyle zoning proposals accurately and appropriately reflect the reality on the ground. And I look at Area 14 on Map 3, which contains Threepwood. I look at Area 15 on Map 3. If you look at Area 15 and you see the existing consented development, one might wonder why it hasn't all been rezoned. I look at Map 23, and one looks at the zoned Bendemeer, which is the yellow, and between Bendemeer and Area 15, there's a whole bunch more building platforms. And one might ask why all that area hasn't been rezoned. I just wonder how much use of this tool was made and that those rezonings were happening. Anyway, I just thought that the commission requested these maps, and I just had to say when I saw them, I found them more interesting and more informative than I expected. So I thought it might be worth making some comments on. Otherwise, commissioners, if there's any comments I wish to make, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Just on your evidence, your primary is what I'm referring to. Is it paragraphs 1.6 A and B there? Were a director in the past tense, or are you still?
Well, possible statement doesn't exist.
Right.
It did its development, finished it, and it's been bound up.
Yes.
Same with parallel shorter statements, they're both X companies. But my company, Arcadia Triangle, owns the last four of those four of them.
Turning to 2.1 on page 3. At the end of the paragraph, when you talk about with the subdivision chapter seeking to replace the minimum 1 hectare with a minimum average, only because it might relate to any rules in the apply in the rural chapter as well, because any development might not necessarily link to subdivision. Are you seeking a minimum area of 1 hectare, a minimum average of 1, are you asking for a minimum lot size as well? Or no minimum lot size?
Minimum average.
Minimum average.
And
so there'll be no minimum lot size in the rural lifestyle zone subdivision?
No. I mean, if somebody wanted a minimum, if there was a minimum of 600 or 700, 6,000 or something. I mean, I'm not opposed to a minimum, but the rationale behind that is, if you look at my annexure A, the little here is that the chapter 22 contains the density, and chapter 27 contains the lot size. Annexure A, which is the Hawthorne estate plan that got consented, there's 32 lots and 23 hectares. It has a density of one lot per hectare.
So that's like you. So the triangle's already been subdivided to a density close to one rather than a density of two. What have you done for the triangle, which I understand to be C?
Yes.
So what is the density? Do you know the actual number?
I would have to add up all those numbers, but I could do. Basically, A is density of one, and it's average of one. It has no limit. I mean, because it was rural general when it was consented, so. And a lot of the rest of the triangle, but I mean, there is actually quite a variety through there.
You've potentially already answered my other question. Because he's focused on the density of that in regard to the triangle, I think is the example you used, my interest would be is, well, how does that, we're going to reduce the density or whatever, how does that then affect the rest of the district where there are similar zones with, well, exactly the same zone, same rules apply? I'm trying to understand what the difference would be there.
Well, the first part of the answer is doesn't necessarily have to have one rule apply right for rural lifestyle zone. I mean, you may or may not be aware that the operating district plan has rural residential and rural lifestyle, but there's a whole bunch of different areas that have different minimums and different averages because they were crafted in accordance with their context. They've been replaced with a very broad brush across the board. Secondly, the point I was making was about density and development yield. You are going to get evidence next week, landscape evidence on effective density, which I thought was not really my position to. I was really trying to avoid sitting here giving opinion evidence. I wanted to give some factual evidence from a developer's point of view. To an extent. So I don't want to advance an opinion on Dale Field or Moody's Road, or I don't think we're the right person to advance an opinion.
You have to disregard it.
It's a landscape, because it's a landscape issue. And why did the ONL down at Glenorchy is another issue entirely. So there may well be different solutions in different areas. Yeah.
So my other helpful question is, how does the density part that you're seeking relate to the objectives and policies that are in the plan, both in this chapter and in other?
Are those the objectives and policies of the council proposing, or objectives and policies that have been proposed on behalf of our raising witnesses, which are now one of the difficulties we're now facing because there's a divergence? And this will be addressed next week, but council started here, strategically we started here, now we're at this hearing. All that evidence relates back to the top level ones that have been advanced, not to the council's top level ones.
So, I'd just know if you've got a view on how these changes that you're seeking relate to whether the ones that the council advanced or whether the ones that advanced in terms of other people that you've either been working for or as you see it in this particular area.
You know, I'll be straining the planning to answer that question. I don't want to cross the line. I would rather you put that question to Mr. Brown or Mr. Farrell, to be honest.
I think there's a simpler way to ask the question, which you would be able to answer. Are you fundamentally seeking a different zone to achieve those results distinguished from the rural zoning that the council has put up to apply in specific areas within the Waikato Basin. Is that the essence?
I think the essence of what I'm saying is, that the rural lifestyle to me is a historic policy. I gave you the background about where it came from. It was in response to submissions from some valid business. It wasn't based upon any planning rationale. It just was put in there.
Mr. McDonald put us all that is only half an hour ago.
it was a political decision in response to some submissions. And it's carried forward. It's now been carried forward. And if you look at the policies and objectives about density and about rural living and about the things that the policies and objectives are trying to achieve in a broad sense, because one of the other qualities of the ODP, which I mentioned in my evidence, is that although we had rural lifestyle and rural residential, the objectives of the policies were identical in the ODP. They're exactly the same. And you have these two different regimes that flow from the precisely same objectives and policies. Now we have a different plan, and it has objectives and policies back. Well, depending on which evidence you adopt, I mean, the council evidence is trying to shut things down, and some of the senators are advancing something that's more enabling. The purpose of my evidence was to try and say, well, if you're looking at rural living and what people want out of rural living and the things that make up a good rural living lot, then the Hawthorne estate 1 hectare average with this variety was designed to meet the market, appears to be meeting the market, Mr. Reed said this was about that, and is an outcome which appears to achieve density and development yield and enables people to have enough privacy to enjoy what you want in a rural living lot. And that 2 hectares, which is twice as much, I raised the question about what's the advantage in providing 2 hectares rather than 1? Yeah, that's a Landsat issue and a planning issue, but from a practical developer's perspective, I'm saying, I think, well, if 1 hectare, you're going to produce that many lots for a demand that's there, and that's like, in a Landsat or planning sense, if there was half that many there, it would be a different story.
But what I was trying to ascertain is whether that developer's point of view applies solely in the Waikato Basin, or is applied generally throughout the district. That's what we're trying to grapple with.
I think my answer to that would be, I don't deduct it, but having heard all the evidence, you might find that evidence in relation to the rest of the district. I'm not sitting here saying that I've thought about Wanaka or anything. I'm saying as a principle, there's a principle for rural living and making efficient use of land without going and, interestingly, the whole crux of the Hawthorne estate decision was that this density stopped just short of over domestication because of the history of the area. It's a density that produces an outcome and has certain qualities, and I don't see any reason why it wouldn't necessarily apply elsewhere. I'm not definitely saying that it would, because there might be some areas where, for landscape reasons, it might be considered inappropriate. I can't think of any, but it might be.
We asked this question earlier today from other people, such as planners and that, but from a developer's perspective, what do you think of the elements in terms of rural living, rural lifestyle, that make up that area from a developer's perspective?
What are the attributes of
what rural living? Elements or whatever of rural, make that up from a developer's perspective?
Large enough. It's large, I think, a bit like a bit large, some of them. It's large enough to have enough room for your house and your outdoor living area. It isn't too much land that you have to get animals to look after or buy a ride-on mower to keep mowing all summer because grass grows.
Sorry, you don't. It should be large enough not to require a ride-on.
Well, yeah, if it's too big, you end up with land that you have to look after. You don't necessarily need. Large enough to be able to get privacy, which is very important. People in rural living are looking for privacy. And you achieve privacy with mounding or screen farming, but around the hectare, 2.5 acres is big enough to do that. Views up and out. So you're looking from your property out of the wider expanse of you have a feeling of being in the country without necessarily being surrounded by a farm. And I think that is predominantly by having kind of other people or neighbours or houses in your face, or, you know, kind of looking straight at them. Maybe see bits of rooms or, you know, I don't know whether you take an invitation to go out on these lots but go and have a look and come and those are kind of things. I don't think you can get those outcomes on a density greater than this. I mean, 4,000 square metres, now I know it's rural residential, but 4,000 square metres cheap by jowl, it's quite tight. Whereas the kind of 6,000-7,000 a hectare just seems to be enough to be able to do your boundary and keep your privacy and have your neighbours far enough away and have the feeling of being in the country.
Is there anything in regard to the topography of the area of the triangle that contributes to its how it's set out and the kind of elements that you just described there compared to other parts of the basin?
Being flat helps. Just again, if you go out there, there's the theme of Hawthorn is mounting to create privacy. It's kind of easier to do on that plan.
The chair has taken
the flatness helps. I mean, it might be on hillsides where you can do mounted, well, you probably can. I don't think there was any. No, actually, I can't really think of a significant. The triangle was developed the way it was because of a whole bunch of historical things, so I don't think it had anything specifically about it that attracted it, except that it had been subject to a lot of subversion.
Turning to paragraph 3.4 in Ewing Goodings, in terms of the 1,000 square metres for the building platform, what's the purpose of an identified building platform from your perspective? What's the purpose of it?
The purpose of it is to provide the landowner the certainty that he can build a house. And that's one side, that's one purpose. The second purpose is, particularly in the rural zone, is to determine the location of where a house on a property should be built. Bearing in mind that in many cases, in fact in most cases, the person doing the subdivision and creating the building platform is not the person who's going to build the house. So the council wants to know that the house being built will meet the criteria, whatever the criteria are, depending on the zone, and when the developer sells and the purchaser buys, the purchaser knows they can build a house.
Now, my next question probably more moves to one which is where you have your tie on again. Does it, the building platforms constitute a development right for that entire area?
Under the current plan, yes.
I mean, you can build under the OEP.
Under the OEP, if you have a building platform, if you have a building platform and subject to whatever controls are imposed when the building platform is created, in the rural zone, not the rural lifestyle, and there's a difference here, because in the rural zone, when they're created, the council looks at it, where is it, how high should you be able to build a house, what colour should you be able to build. In the rural zone, you go through a whole discretionary regime to get your building platform, as Hawthorne did, and you end up with controls like the Hawthorne ones, which say maximum 7 metres, you go to the pitched roof. The more sensitive the location, the more stringent the controls can be. They can have 4 metre pipelines sometimes. So whereas in the rural lifestyle, you just subdivide. You have a right to subdivide it as we moment, minimum one, average two, and you have the right to put a 1,000 square metre building platform. The council can kind of edge you around in your 1 to 2 hectares and shift the building platform that way or that way. But they can't impose a height control. If you have a building platform 1,000 square metres, 8 metres high, that's where you're entitled to.
Why can they not impose a height control?
It's not one of them as a discretion.
Is it a strict discretion in the building platform? I haven't heard it.
There's a list. I think it reads the restricted. I've never heard anybody trying to impose a height control on the rural lifestyle. Rural lifestyle. Rural residential doesn't happen. But that's kind of the point I was making, that at the moment you have a right. If you have an existing building platform, you have a right. And one of my concerns about the 500 square metres was you're actually taking half the right away. Because above 500 is restricted discretion, which means you might get quite a fundamental thing.
So you say you have a 1,000 square metre building platform, you should have the same footprint allowance.
Well, at the moment, you have a right of 1,000 square metres.
Yes.
Now, a certain reality takes it. You've got to put your house there, your garage there, you're using your drive-in, your accessway, so you end up, people build on 1,000 square metres, and it's a 300 or 400 or 500 square metre house that is scattered around with it. It gives you the design flexibility to do 1, 2, 3 little nodes or a big house or whatever. But 1,000 square metres is historic.
So how does the 500 metres not give the opportunity to design within the node 1,000 square metres?
It gives you the opportunity to design the 500 to 1,000 square metres. But if you end, because of people don't like to go through consent things often, you need 500. Now, you don't need more than 500. And in particular, as often happens in the country, where people generally build single story houses, generally spread out. And if you want more than 500, you've got a single story, and you can go to 500. If you want to go to 501, you must apply for restricted discretion activity. And I'm just raising a question, Mark, as to, first of all, and this is only in the rural lifestyle, because bearing in mind that the rural general zones get your building platform, you're already subject to a whole bunch of controls. But in the rural lifestyle, where you currently have 1,000, what I call Marion Reed's theoretical 1,000 times 8,000 square metres, and that's been in place for 18 years. I don't know of any 8,000 square metre houses, so this is a problem.
We pass.
And why put someone through, if you've zoned it for that level of development, for that density, and you're giving them 1,000 square metres, why restricted it? I don't know.
So I'm having trouble moving from the 1,000 square metres gives you the ability to grab up the entire. It's a building platform that state doesn't give you. I'm unable to see how you make a move to that
you can do that as of right, where it's not as of right, is it? It's as under the ODP. While that's there, what's the activity status control on when you design, want to build a house there? What's
controlled activity,
right.
External appearance,
right.
Not size,
not
size. Not height.
Right.
So
the
colour, the external colour,
right,
is about it. Landscaping. Landscaping, I think, is there. Access, I think, is there. Height isn't there. Size isn't there.
So
the government can stop you building a pink house, but they can't stop you building an 8 metre high, 1,000 square metre house.
In terms of the, I think you sort of said it was your terminology, I think it's a liberalisation of the.
It was Dr. Reed's.
I'm trying to work out whether under the new plan, with the way the rules are structured, that even if it's at 500 square metres, is it that you can. Less consents or whatever that you have to go through in terms of those
structures. I've acknowledged that they're not permitted.
Right, yeah.
It's now for up to 500, you're permitted, provided you comply with standards,
yes,
which include external colour and reflectivity.
Yes.
So I acknowledge that the permitted activity status.
Yes.
There's a step in the right direction, and I agree with the analysis that says that we're going to have a lot of consents. I don't have a problem with that.
So, do you think that should be taken further in terms of addressing the matters you've raised with us regarding the 8 metres and 1,000 square metres?
Yes, I'm raising a question mark about, well, if you're going to permit it with standards to 500. Why can't you go to permissible standards for 1,000? Given you can put your 500 here or here, why make them go through a resource consent to go over 500? I just don't quite get the rationale.
Do we know how many over 500 square metre houses there are?
Nope.
Or apply?
Nope. I know there's some big ones out there. I couldn't think of any. And I also did suggest two alternative options which would actually address the issue possibly without in my summary I addressed. Oh, 311 and 312. I made two suggestions of an alternative planning control that might address Dr. Reed's concern about a 8,000 cubic metre house. Without creating the means for resources. And one was actually to change the research discretion to crop. If you really want to control over 500 and not take the right away, you could make it control.
In 3.8, just in terms of the Hawthorn Estate or the triangle, How is height controlled in any way in there by way of covenants or anything like that?
Consent notice condition. On the titles.
On the titles, yes. Sorry, what is the height limit?
It's in there, 3.8. Maximum height of 7 metres.
Right.
Main roofs in the middle of which are 35 degrees, which is quite steep. And the intention of that, the call from the state, was to maintain privacy, but to get way down to a single story.
Right.
And also, there was a big battle between the neighbours on the hillside and down pitched roofs, kind of.
So,
a lesser external thing. But my concern was that there are consent notice, people have bought lots with consent notice restrictions, which is 7 metres, 35 degree pitch roof. And now the council's going to come along with another rule in the district plan, which is you can't build your old book, you're down to 500 square metres. So at the moment, the right is a certain amount, and it's going to be cut in half. I think more than cut in half, because those are slightly larger buildings.
But in those areas of rural lifestyle that haven't been developed yet, it will just be under the new rules.
Oh, correct, yeah, yeah. That issue is limited to existing uses.
So the, in 4.6 on page 14, could you explain just what you mean by having the subdivisions of prohibited activity?
No, I see no reason why the plan couldn't allow to address my concern. I expressed allow two residential units on the building platform and have another building, but says applying to subdivide those two residential units on a single building platform is prohibited. Now that's the extreme. It could be non-compliant, which would make it really difficult. And there's typically a reluctance to go to a criminal, and I would have thought that a strongly worded policy and rule with non-compliant activity status, I would think would be adequate. But if just when I was concerned about it, you could go to the next step, which is prohibited. I wanted to make it quite clear, I wasn't trying to create the right for someone to get their two units and then subdivide.
Well, we've had a discussion earlier about getting two units, they've both then got 1,000 square metres to build it in and infinitum.
I'm talking about two. The district plan says a building platform must be between 70 and 1,000. I'm talking about, and you can have a house and a residential flat. I'm just saying, why not two small units on one building platform?
I think what Mr. Sinclair is alluding to is Mr. McDonald had a different opinion.
That wouldn't be unusual.
So is your suggestion regarding the prohibited activity space that is covered by the submission?
Yes, I'm just saying that if...
Sorry, but I'm not... Sorry. By your... I don't mean in you speaking to us or your evidence that you're going to make it in your actual submission. Do you seek that? Have you sought that in the submission?
Submission says you should be able to have two residential units in the building platform. Mr. Bars expressed a concern about that, and as a consequence, to address that concern if necessary, that would be a consequential relief. I'm sure my submission talks about consequential and internal relief.
I'm sure that you drafted that.
just which character you were in while you were presenting to us at this point in time. And Philip, my last one was just. The difference in 5.7, when you talk about the occupation of residential unit and visitor accommodation giving rise to similar effects, what might be the differences between the effects of those?
Well,
primary
differences in residential. I think the prime difference is that permanent residence generates more effects than visitor accommodation that's from time to time. And as long as permanently resided in, has the average 8 to 10 traffic movements per day and everything else that flows from somebody living in a house. Visitor accommodation, depending on its nature, Airbnb type visitor accommodation probably has less because it's probably not permanently resided. That's about the only difference that I see in effects. The accommodation probably has less.
Can I just, I was going to ask a question on this, I may as well throw this into the mix at the moment, because I've had experience here as a hearing commissioner dealing with visitor accommodation that did have particularly adverse effects arising from the fact that the nature of the accommodation was such that it encouraged large groups of people to hire it and party in it for a week on end. It's somewhat different from what would normally be a residential situation, and it was a situation that required some sort of management arrangement. And the question I was going to ask you was whether you considered some form of consent from the council may be appropriate just to ensure that those sort of management arrangements, or that the manager be on site or something like that, be in place rather than it just be an open free for all.
No problem. Okay, probably talk about after some point. Yes. The houses are there, that'll be a problem, but you know,
yes.
I suspect it's the exception rather than the rule, and it needs to be a consent. I think standard, and maybe some form of consent, and council knows you're doing it, they keep you on the right side of the
Anyway, I'm not sure. I'm still not convinced that that's particularly resource management reason.
No. I just seem to me that, I acknowledge this particular aspect was influenced last May when my wife and I drove around Spain and stayed in three or four Airbnb places and had a wonderful time with the people who lived there, and it was just a very pleasant experience. And I think that should be encouraged in the system.
Thank you, Mr. Goldstein. I just want to return to this issue of the building's footprint inside the building in what, the 1,000 square metre area. At 311 and 312, you're able to offer a couple of ideas, I suppose, in relation to how we might deal with an expanded footprint. Commissioner St. Clair asked you what that maximum little area might be, and I think you said you were raising the question. Under those two scenarios that you've suggested there, you'd be saying you'd remove the 500 square metres as a maximum footprint?
No, the first one, instead of applying, so we start off with permitted activity 500 square metres subject to standard.
Yes.
And what my first option is that instead of making above 500 metres restricted discretionary, because of Dr. Reed's concern about a big house, you could have a standard that says above 500 square metres you can't go above 6.5. So your permitted activity within there will be 500 at 8 and 500 at 6.5. Just to stop the big block.
So you would have a maximum buildable area of 1,000 square metres.
As we have at the moment.
Yeah. And presumably the equivalent situation for 312.
And 312, the alternative was above 500, make it controlled rather than restricted discretionary, so you don't lose the right.
Yes.
And possibly include refinish
as a control.
As a matter of discretion.
Okay, so 500 to the permitted, and then controlled up to the maximum of 1,000.
No, the exceeding 500 is controlled, and the two refinish controlled.
So I understand the issue you're talking about in relation to, you might set up a house that might be oriented along the long side of your overall.
Yep.
But and then you might want to turn your garage 90 degrees so you can trap some manoeuvring space, if you like, which is part of your 1,000 square metres, but it's just the shape factor of how you arrange your house and your garage. Is that what you mean?
Yes. Most people design inside their 1,000 square metre building platform there. The house and the garage, maybe a little unit, and sort of the forecourts in the middle, and often it's a U shape.
Yeah.
I mean, some people build a big block house, but most people kind of do it in smaller units.
In my experience, it's the architects that tend to build the maximum. They like to pay whatever they can get away with.
Are you paid by the meter?
Yes.
I just want to, the maps that you've represented with your summary, just looking at your map 3, also think on this idea of removing the average 2 hectare lot size for the rural lifestyle area, just in terms of your experience as a developer, those areas that are currently or proposed to be zoned rural lifestyle, in terms of their shape factor, their size, and the location of existing residences, would they be able to be subdivided again down to 1 hectare lot sizes without requiring the removal of existing buildings and then the development of 2 more? And I'm thinking about that in relation to your, I was interested in your analysis of the economic effects of the additional land value, I think it's at paragraph 2.6 of your statement of evidence. Are we required to knock down $1 million building here in order to build 2 more and create an extra bit of land?
Well, I think the answer to that question is greenfield. It doesn't matter because you can start off with the ones and I call them. If you're talking about existing brownfield, and Area 5 is probably the obvious example, which is Dalefield. It's the most long established, if you go out there and look, it's the most long established. It was 4 hectare subdivision back in the 70s. And then it became rural lifestyle where you could cut once. And I don't know why they subdivided those long, I do know actually. I'm sure they subdivided those long, thin lots to get access to the road. So look,
Mr. McDonald explained this access. Right. Pre the county's amendment act.
Yes. he probably did all of it, so he was fine. And then the council in the rural lifestyle gave them what I call a one cut. The start they had for 4 hectares, then in 1998 they had cut once. Minimum, that's where the average 2 minimum 1 came from, was Dalefield. A number of them have cut once. A number of them have a house sitting in the middle of their 4 hectares. They've mostly got houses, they've mostly got extensive landscaping. And I have little doubt that there will be some where you could cut off a hectare without too much trouble. There'll be some where it just doesn't suit the way there'll be some with a lovely house and a 4 hectare lot and they don't want it. And no one's gonna knock down $1 million house to create an extra $1 million lot,
nothing
like that.
Or
$750,000. No, that's down on the floor of the basement, and Dalefield's, that's a bit of premium, I think. So, the short answer to your question is that if the landowners were given that right, some would do it, some wouldn't. I can't say how many would.
So, it's more likely to be taken up in terms of an efficiency argument for greenfield sites than it is areas
to a greater extent of greenfield. So I think any developer doing it in the greenfield site will probably go to the one if they can, because they can.
Yes.
That's what developers do. In the brownfields, there will be some who want it and some who don't. And that's why my only concern about the rule was, given it's an established area, there should be a minimum distance to a neighbour that they can object to it. I referred to that in... I asked the landscape witness to give an opinion as to what that appropriate distance would be, and that's Mr. Scotland's evidence. I didn't think it was appropriate for me to give an opinion. But I think the neighbours there deserve some protection to avoid having, in an established area, suddenly having a house appear right across their fence, without, especially as they're long, thin lots, without a right to object within a certain distance. Well, I didn't want to suggest it. I asked the landscape architect to get an opinion.
Yes.
He gave an opinion of 65 metres.
65.
And I then, as a matter of interest, ran my scale rule under Plan A, and most of those building platforms are closer than 65 metres to each other. So he said 65 metres, and I ran my scale rule over and thought to myself, that's actually probably about right, or it could be 85. It should be at least 65. It could be 85, it could even be 100 if you're going to be conservative. But that was his opinion, so he's against it.
Okay.
Just one thing you told us with Hawthorne and this original views from a developer's perspective, you said that the height limits were kept down at the smaller lot sizes to ensure privacy of not having two-storey houses. If we were to accept that 1 hectare average is appropriate, would it equally be appropriate to look at that sort of issue as well?
Yes.
Then it would be appropriate to have a lower height size.
Or a pitch creek.
Something to ensure that, yes, that two-storey development was limited or, yes, non-existent.
Yes. There's just no need. Most people don't do it. And provided there's a single story or roof pitch, achieving privacy is really easy. You need mounds. You need a mound or some planting that's 2 metres high.
So in Hawthorne, the consent notices, you said, is that a combination of height and roof pitch, or is it just the roof pitch?
It's centimetre height plus primary roofs, note that 35 degrees or more. You're allowed secondary flat pits between the primary roof holes. And then if you go out there, all those houses are built to those controls.
Does it allow for dormer windows, or does it stop?
It doesn't stop doors. It doesn't stop a little bit of kind of, yeah, a little thing like that.
It stops
a big second floor with the
mm.
It's really hard to get the privacy.
Okay. Thank you. That's okay. Helpful. And we've had great achievement with this slicing on the fire.
Well, I'm just about it. I just missed my 10-5 minutes. We're putting the friend.
Did you wish to say something?
I was just going to say, Mr. Nugent, if it helps, if you're going to ask a question to other submitters about the residential flat, I can sort of guide you to the rule that would make building residential flats permitted. If that helps, I'm not
that
trying to
help because
I'm not trying to
ask the reason for you to possess on my place right now. So, rule,
we can address this in our reply, but just in terms of putting it to other submitters.
Let's see if we can get it on in front of us now.
I
might not be confused.
Well, it might not solve it. It was just
worth a go.
Yeah.
So, Rule 2147 on page 2110 says the construction and exterior alteration of buildings located within a building platform. So there it is. So it's basically saying the construction or alteration of a building within a building platform is a permitted activity subject to standards.
What page?
I'm looking at
2210.
Yeah. So is this of your version? Of your amended version?
It hasn't changed. So you can look at it on any version, it'll be the same, should be the same rule. 21.4.7.
Oh, I was looking at the
it should,
I was looking at the
rule of life.
Oh, yes.
So that's what?
Oh, well, it should be drafted the same. Okay, we'll go to that zone then. Fundamentally, it's the same issue and the same, so it should be drafted the same. So which chapter do you want me to go to? Sorry.
22.4.
Okay, I've got that one. It should be consistent with the... Okay, so... Okay, so chapter 22.4.3.1, rural lifestyle zone, the construction exterior alteration of buildings located within a building platform. So residential flat, 22.4.6, residential flat activity only, the specific rules for constructions of buildings apply. So if you're putting the residential flat in a building platform, then that's permitted. If you want to put it outside of the platform, then it's treated like any other building outside of the platform, which would be non-complying, which is...
Okay, so in both cases, then there are two rules that you need to use. There's the construction of the building, and then there's the residential unit rule, and then the construction of the building and the residential flat rule. And the construction of the building rule is the same in each case.
That's correct.
That's the simple answer.
That's correct, and the slightly longer answer is that a residential flat sits under the definition of residential units, so it actually doesn't need to be there. But the reason why it is there is because the operative district plan says that residential flats are controlled. So to try to avoid confusion around people wondering what the status of residential flats is, it was singled out as being permitted. But technically it doesn't need to be because it sits under that definition.
So that then creates a problem. If you say one residential unit is permitted, and a residential flat is a residential unit.
Not if you look at the definition of residential unit. It sits within that, so it sits.
Okay.
So I'll
look a bit more closely over the next couple of days.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. 10 a.m. on Monday the 23rd.